Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Welcome to episode 94 of We Are Going Up. We caught you by surprise. We're a day early this week. This is Mark Crossley, and alongside me, Carl McQueen.
Hello, mate.
Is here. And, well, it's just two of us in the studio again this week. Can't get the numbers these days, can you? We've got Jim, who's away, or been away in Turkey. I think he's just got back.
Been on international duty.
He's been on international duty, so we're hopefully going to speak to him later in the show on the phone. And our good friend David Cameron Walker is at Bestival as we record. Now, you were at Bestival with him this time last year. What will he be doing around about this point on a Sunday?
I suppose, in theory, that's international duty as well.
He'll
either be comatose in his tent after the weekend's finally caught up with him, or he will currently be standing, I don't know what the weather will be like on the Isle of Wight, standing waiting for Sir Elton John to come on stage. I'm sure will be excellent. Last year it was Stevie Wonder who finished off the festival. This year it's Sir Elton.
So no DC.
So that means we don't have to mention a W word.
We don't. We won't mention it at all this week, I can promise you, actually. Instead, we're going to, because it's International Week and there's not been as many...
Sir Elton John...
Because it's been the international weekend and there's been less games on, we're going to actually turn the spotlight on a team we have never covered on this show before, Mansfield Town, who are back in the Football League this year after 5 years away, and they've started pretty well. Six games in, all is going well. I think 9 points on the board. Later we'll speak to Stephen Thurkill from the Mansfield and Ashfield Chad, who's a two-time author and a football reporter covering the Stags, so we'll speak to Stephen later. But we're going to start in League Two, and down at the bottom, where Hartlepool United have had a horror start to the season. Only one league goal so far, can you believe? They sit second bottom with only Accrington below them, and they lost again at home 2-1 to Wickham on Saturday. And on the line to speak to us, I'm pleased to say we have got Nick Laughlin, who's the sports editor at the Northern Echo. And Nick, new manager in there, Colin Cooper, obviously struggling to reverse the downward momentum of relegation. How big a task is it looking already to turn this around?
It's pretty much a massive one at the moment. Yes, it is early days for the manager. You know, he's come in with a fresh outlook, fresh ideas, and it probably was a bit of a shock to some and to certain sections of support that John Hughes got the chop at the end of last season. To be honest, the state pulls in when he took over. Marino, Ferguson, whoever couldn't have come in and saved them that ravel from the drop. You know, they're in that much of a mess and that much of a state. To be honest, it was an absolute bomb site the way it was going. He went, Colin Cooper comes in, great pedigree. You know, everyone in the North East knows him from his time at Borough. You know, he's been long hankering for the chance to be a manager, you know, to prove himself as a number one rather than a coach or a youth coach. He's got this task, but it's, like you say, it's proven a bit of a difficult one at the moment.
Well, only 39 goals in the league all last season, so in a way, you could see this coming, the lack of goals.
Yeah, and if you go back the season before last as well, in my report in today's Northern Echo, you know, I've just sort of done the stats and worked out that since September the 17th, 2011, they've lost 25 home games and failed to score in 26 home games. You know, so it's granted it's only been £150 for a season ticket for those for this.
That's a good job.
Three seasons. So even then, there's an argument whether that's been value for money.
So why is that then? I mean, that must be pretty unprecedented, I think, amongst the Football League teams to have a home record that poor.
Yeah, that poor over that, you know, that long a stretch of time as well. You know, every team can have, but most, dare I say, can have, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, even 6 poor home results on the trot. But, you know, they've had runs where they've gone 8 games at home without a goal, to that extent as well. And now that there's very much a mindset that if they don't score the first goal, they concede the first goal after 20 minutes, half an hour or so, and the body language just changes completely. It's heads down, confidence just drains instantly. The crowd start to get that feeling of here we go again. The players sense it, and then they spend the next 20 minutes, half hour, whatever, scratching around, trying to come to terms with it. and not being good enough to get an equaliser, even, never mind turn it around and win.
Yeah, Nick, looking at the squad, for example, that played Torquay in a 0-0 draw the other week, there is the mix of experience and youth. People like Steve Howard, Andy Monkhouse coming off the bench. And then you've got players like Brad Walker, which will send a shudder down most people's spine, was born on the 25th of April, 1996, which is actually 3 weeks. I had to look this up to find out a significant footballing date around then. It was 3 weeks after Liverpool 4, Newcastle 3, the Collymore goal, which is just absolutely frightening. But the case remains, you know, he's incredibly young, 17 years old. So, for example, he should be full of enthusiasm. Yeah. Steve Howard has been there, done that. He's played in every division, basically. He's got been through it all. He should know, he should be able to lead the team. Andy Monkhouse has been there for years, be able to lead the team. So, really, there shouldn't be a problem when it comes to, you know, issues like morale, should there?
No, there shouldn't be, but you've sort of touched on one of the things, one of the sticking points there, where you say, you know, I'm not naming it, you know, Andy Monkhouse has been around for years. I think that's been part of the problem. There's been a wedge of players, you know, a number of players in the squad who've been there too long, and the club's been loath to turn it round and, you know, move them on as such. You know, there was a massive change, if you like, last summer. Richie Humphreys was freed, and, you know, he's sort of player of the century, played 500 odd games for the club, part of the furniture. And he was one of the handful of players who got released at the end of last season following relegation, when really there should have been 8, 9, 10 of them, you know, being scattered and moved on, because as much as teams need to freshen up, players and individuals need to freshen up as well. You know, they need a new outlook, different change of scenery, different club, different teammates, because there is a danger that, you know, players stay at the club for too long and they do get stale.
I guess at the same time, though, the freshening up came on the managerial side of things with Colin Cooper and Craig Tignett. I mean, John Hughes, weirdly, I must bring this up, he was, I believe, one of the final few to take the, I'm a Swindon fan, to take the Swindon Town job, which Paolo Di Canio actually took.
That's
now,
right,
that could have been,
was,
how history could have been so different. And I'm not suggesting Paolo Di Canio could be Hartlepool manager.
Well, he's in the northeast.
Yeah,
might be out of a job soon.
Yeah, so he might actually be there. I'd like to see the odds on that. But Colin Cooper, along with Craig Hignett, you know, so two people who know each other very well, they've not been stuck together at random. From what you've seen, therefore, have they not really been able to make any mark so far on the team and on the squad's ethos?
No, because I think, you know, again, going back to when John Hughes took over, John Hughes took over from a very, very low base, to be honest. You know, the team was desperate. You know, I've been watching them now, since 1979, and been reporting on them for longer than Brad Walker's been on, you know, and last season was, you know.
I'm sorry I brought that up.
Yeah, it made me feel older than me, nearly 41 years there. And, you know, last season was an absolute disaster. You know, it stemmed from a long time before that. They brought Neil Cooper back to the club as manager, hoping to recapture the glory, if you like, years of when he was in charge first time around, because when he was in charge in early 2000s, the team was flying. It was fantastic. It was happy days. They brought him back, hoping to get that spark back, but he was just out of touch, lost, struggled to contain the dressing room with some strong characters. John Hughes came in and he galvanised them, he lifted them, and he got them sort of evened out a little bit, and relegation was inevitable. But then, yeah, you know, the new manager comes in, new coach comes in, and they're just trying to shrug off that mentality. Colin Cooper's forever, not badgering us, but, you know, getting the message across to the press that it's last season's gone. You know.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask, what's he been like in interviews after all this long run of goalless games?
He's fine. He's upbeat. He's positive. He can see where he wants to go and where he wants to take them. And, you know, the club is very stringently sticking to the financial fair play rules. And while plenty of teams flex them, bend them and manipulate them to their advantage, Hartlepool United don't and won't. The owners run a very tight ship. You know, they pump the best part of £1.5 million in a year to keep them going and, you know, bankroll them, if you like. But when it comes to paying big transfer fees, signing on fees, agents, etc., it's pretty much a no-go. So Colin and Craig are having to, you know, I think he had five of his signings in the other week, a couple of weeks ago, which was a sign of progress and that they look better for it. And he is developing, or trying to develop, a squad based on youth. There's some decent young prospects in, and he's getting players. He's hoping to attract young players, loan players from the other three northeast clubs.
Well, I mean, that's the obvious thing to go and do. You've got three big clubs around you who, for example, Newcastle, who's probably got hundreds of players on the board. So Sunderland actually given Paolo Di Canio's in charge now, signing the people left, right and centre. So the obvious thing is to obviously tap into the loan market.
Well, when does that open? Does that open about a week's time, the window, doesn't it, the loan window?
It's this
Is it this week, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, frankly, it's obviously goal scoring that is the issue. I mean, it's issues around the squad, but when
one goal
when it opens,
in seven games,
yeah, is it simply up front, or do then you need to make sure you still bring in loan players elsewhere?
Yeah, well, they put five past Bradford in the JPT.
I was going to come on to this, yeah. Well, we'll talk about this in a minute. Go on.
Yeah. You know, they can do it. It's what he's trying to do is not just go health 11 and trying to get a striker in. He's trying to just get players in who will improve, develop the squad. He's done that to a certain extent. Two lads from Middlesbrough who've looked good. Centre-half Christian Burgess and a centre midfielder in Matty Dolan, and they've certainly added something. Like you've mentioned, the emergence of Brad Waugh has been a positive. That's been good. But and there is a little bit of a fresher outlook, but he's been very limited in what he can do, and it's more what he can't do. And you know, it wasn't long ago that he was Peter Hartley left, went to Stevenage, and before he left for Stevenage, Colin Cooper was basically asking through the press as such for Middlesbrough, Newcastle and Sunderland to give Poole's players for free. You know, send them to us, you still pay the wages, we can't pay anything, but we'll develop them as footballers and give them first team experience, which in an ideal world that would happen, but in the brutal, harsh world of football and finance, it doesn't happen, does it?
It doesn't. And you did mention the JPT game there. I mean, looking at the results this season, the league games, 3-0 defeat at Rochdale, 1-0 to Southend, 0-0 at York, 1-0 defeat to Fleetwood, 0-0 against Torquay, and then obviously Saturday's a 2-1 defeat, but in amongst all that, a 5-0 win against Bradford, a team who were flying in League One. Was it just a case of Bradford sort of changing their team around entirely, or what happened?
Changing their team entirely. I think they'd have changed, like, brought 11 fans to play on this basis. I think the guys, Dom and Tom from the Bantams Banter podcast we speak to, must have played. I mean, it must be very frustrating as well, that result coming up in the Cup.
Yeah, completely. And, you know, when we spoke to Colin Cooper at his press conference last Thursday, his talk was trying to rein the players in, you know, and not let them get carried away by what they'd done and how they'd performed against Bradford, to keep them on the straight and narrow. But then, sure enough, you know, it's the same routine, the same story. 20 minutes in, they don't score. They end up conceding, can't put one back. And yes, they scored on Saturday, but it was only in the 93rd minute out of 94, so it counted for very little, to be honest.
And it was approaching 9 hours or something in the league without a goal at that point.
Yeah, well, the Pool's record is stretching back to 1993. 1,227 minutes. So on a few times in the last couple of seasons, they've been quite close to eclipsing that, to be honest.
When does this, Nick, become more of just a worrying start to the season and then a really serious issue for the club? Because lest we forget, this time last season, Andy Thorne and John Sheridan already lost their jobs in the Football Leagues, and yet no one has gone yet. Kevin McDonald Swindon did go just before the season started, but no one has actually gone yet. So when does this become a really serious situation when people think we need a change here in terms of management, we need it now?
I think with Colin Cooper, Craig Hinn, that they've got to be given time, because Pools have gone through too many managers in recent times. From probably Colin, I would say Colin Cooper is the first proper permanent manager Pools have had since Danny Wilson. He was appointed in 2006 following relegation into League Two. He turned them round. Danny Wilson's a cracking fellow, proper football man, knows his stuff inside out, turned the club around, got them promoted. And I'd like to think this could be, it's a similar base, because since then they've had a director of sport in charge of the team, they've had a first team coach in charge of the team. They've never actually had, until this summer's appointment, a manager and an assistant manager in charge of the team. So they've got a bit of faith in them. You know, the owners, they admit they've made mistakes in the past, but they can't, they just cannot afford to go getting rid of either both of them already, because it's just far too early. You know, if come February, March, then questions asked, that's natural, but not yet. No, they've got to be given room to manoeuvre, given chance to develop, wheel and deal in the market, get their own players and stamp their own mark on things and move on from there.
Big game on Saturday already, on the 14th of September. Bottom two in the league playing each other, Hartlepool against Accrington. If you can't win this game, then you are in trouble.
Can you call a game in the middle of September a relegation six-pointer?
I think this is one.
I think it's getting towards it, yeah.
I got a text last night from one of my mates who said it was a 12-pointer. It's that big already. Losing, you go bottom of the league at this stage. If this was a game in April, and you're playing Accrington Stanley and you're, at the bottom of the league, then it's a 6-pointer, 12-pointer, whatever you want to call it. At the moment, it's a game that Pools just simply, have to win. Nothing more, nothing less.
I suppose turn it on his head, though, and look in the positive side of things. A win against a team which, if you can beat someone, you think you can beat Accrington. A win could be the catalyst you need to finally start picking up the league. Then the loan window will open and players may start to drip into the squad. And who knows, in a couple of months, you may be mid-table, which will be, you know, a relative success given the start.
Yeah, I mean, last week you could still get, I don't know what the price is today, but last week before the Bradford game, you'd get 7-1 on pools to finish in the top half of the table, which, to be honest, I had a few quid on because I thought was a decent little bet that at that place. And it came in after the Bradford game. I'll have to check what it is now because it's probably going out at 10-1 after losing again on Saturday. But look, listen, they haven't been playing badly. You know, they've been architects of their own downfall to a certain extent at times. And when you're at the bottom, things don't go for you, do they? Simple as that. You know, this Saturday they had a Burgess had a shot at goal from 6 yards. Midfielder stood 2 yards behind the goal and clears it. It's in. Referee doesn't see it. Linesman doesn't see it. It's no goal. If Poole score the first goal, they get the belief, the confidence, and they go from there. You know, they haven't been playing badly. It's just, you know, daft mistakes, individual errors, if you like. And it's fine margins, isn't it? As Tony Mowbray says, week in, week out, fine margins with football games.
I tell you what,
that's what Poole's are finding.
It's never dull in the North East with those four sides at the moment, is it? The state they're all in.
I mean, I've been sports editor here since... on the Northern Echo since 1998, and the amount of managers and events, you know, big experiences, big changes, change rounds we've come across and had to deal with, it's been frightening. It is, you know, just things just drop at the hat suddenly, you know, and it's not just including the four professional teams. We've had the, you know, the big, the major demise of Darlington as well, who went from the Football League to the very bottom of the football ladder, you know, the Northern League as such in the last couple of years. So it's been carnage at times to be honest, covering football in the North East.
Well, Nick, thanks very much for coming on, and we appreciate it. But before you, actually, just before you go, tell us about the drive to Torquay.
Oh, stunning. Pick me mate up. Left home at 6:30 on Saturday morning.
Right.
Pick me mate up. Got to Torquay for about 1-ish, something like that. 0-0 draw. Set up at 6, got back home at 12:15.
Well, hey. Nick, if you want to make your money back on that, Hartlepool 350-1 now to win League 2. So maybe worth a pound. Maybe not. Probably not. But you never know.
Brilliant.
If you can get 10-1 on a top half finish, go for that, because that won't be a bad price.
Nick, thanks very much for coming on. That's Nick Laughlin, sports editor at the Northern Echo. And in just a second, well, we're going to stay in League 2. Right, let's move on then, and we're going to take the opportunity, as it's International Week, to focus on a side that we have never, ever covered on this show before. The reason being that Mansfield Town have been outside the Football League since 2008, but now, after being crowned Blue Square Bet Premier Champions last season, they're back, and they're doing all right for themselves. 9 points from the first 6 games is a pretty good return for Paul Cox's men. The latest point being taken in that 1-1 draw at Newport on Saturday. And to tell us more about Mansfield's start on the phone, we've got Mansfield Town author and reporter Stephen Thurkill from the Mansfield and Ashfield Chad. Stephen, thank you very much for coming on the show. Am I right in thinking that most Mansfield fans will be happy with the start that they've made so far?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, when you get promoted, you come to the new league, you want to, you know, you don't want to get left trailing at the bottom. You want to establish yourself, get points on the board, and they've done that well. I think, to be honest with you, there's a bit of a feeling of we've done well, but we could do better. You know, they lost the first game of the season against Scunny. They've not lost since, but they've drawn 3 of them games. And in all 3 of them games, really, they could have won. Probably should have won. And obviously, you know, they had 6 more points for their tally. They'd be sitting second just behind Chesterfield. So there's a lot of very encouraging signs, really.
And it's become a little bit of a sort of common trend in the last few years that the teams that tend to go up from the conference tend to stay up. What are the expectations for Mansfield fans this season? Is it all about establishing yourselves or establishing the club as a league club again?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, Mansfield Town, as you said, they've been out of the Football League for a long time, and I think people in this area see Mansfield Town as, you know, they should be a Football League club, and obviously getting relegated hurt. It took a lot of hard work, a lot of effort, and you know, obviously a bit of luck to get promoted, but they did it in style last season. So this season, yeah, it's all about probably, you know, looking at mid-table finish, and you never know. I mean, I think the problem that Mansfield Town have got this season, they got up there because of Matt Green's goals. Matt Green gets sold to Birmingham. The big question is, who's going to score goals for Mansfield Town? As I said, he's 6 games played, 7 goals scored. if they had a better goal scorer, they'd have probably had four, maybe even six more points. Top scorer at the moment, Sam Klukas, on two goals. So I think that's the challenge for the team at the moment. They've got a good spine to the team. They've got a pretty decent strength in depth. A good, you know, and a good squad. It's going to turn them 1 point into 3 points.
Well, let's stick on that theme, Stephen. Talking about the team itself, the other 23 teams in League Two will listen to this, with perhaps the obvious exception of Newport County. We'll want to know about the squad they will face this season. It's been obviously a few years, 2008 when you got relegated, or Mansfield got relegated from the Football League. You mentioned obviously the departure of Matt Green to Birmingham and Sam Klukas. Yeah. I noticed he spent a lot of time with Glenn Hoddle at the academy in Spain. Talk us through a few of the notable players who could mould Mansfield's season, you know, be it up front, in defence, wherever you think could be the key points.
Yeah, well, you've touched on it there. Obviously Sam Klukas is one of the main players. Big hopes. You know, boss Paul Cox, he sort of put him in that bracket as a player that can follow in Matt Bean's footsteps, you know, and a player that can make it to Championship level. And I know Nottingham Forest have been sniffing around him quite, you know, with a lot of interest. He set himself a target of 15 goals for the season, and if he could reach that, then that'll be a massive help for the team. Obviously, every team needs a good goalkeeper. Mansfield Town, with Alan Marriott, they've got that. You know, he's a player that's done it at this level before, and very experienced. And you know, you look back to the game that they won against Wickham. You know, they won 1-0, and Marriott nearly produced two or three really good saves just before half time. And obviously, that's how I'm going to win the game. So he's a quality player, Klukas. Clements in midfield, he's got a bit of skill about him, a bit of nous, he knows how to spray that ball around. Maguire also in centre midfield from Fleetwood, he's got a lot of experience at this level. So I think that's the key, really. They've got a nice blend of sort of, you know, youth and experience. It's just hopefully the experienced players can bring the younger players on, like Ollie Palmer, Klukas, and you know, get the best out of them and get a few goals. And if you find goals, I really do think Manchester stands to challenge for the playoffs.
I was going to ask you about Ollie Palmer, because you mentioned the need for a goal scorer, Green going. He was top scorer in the Conference South for Havant and Waterlooville last season. 25 goals. He's got 15 goals the season before that. So he's obviously got goals in him. What's he looked like since he's come in?
Yeah, he's looked decent. I mean, he scored his first goal against Wickham, and that meant the world to him. It's early days, I guess, for, you know, a few of the old cliche. He's trying to get into the team ever so slowly, but sure, Paul Cox is protecting him a bit. He picked up an injury in a behind closed door game, and so he's sort of been coming on as sub and, you know, starting at half, you know, coming on at half time and things like that. But he's showed what he can do, and I think he just needs to get a few more goals under his belt. You know, once one comes, then another comes, then hopefully they'll come. You know, I spoke to him after the Portsmouth game. He's a player that does believe they can challenge, and he said the same, really. He's turning them points into wins and then just getting the goals, and hopefully he can be the man to do it.
I think for a lot of people listening, the only sort of thing they probably will have seen in Mansfield in the last few years was the cup game against Liverpool. And tell us a little bit about the sort of brand of football that they've got there, and the brand of football that got them promoted. Was it sort of pretty direct? Was it a combination of direct and on the floor? I mean, what was the formula that worked so well? Because it was an exceptional season and a very tight title race last year.
Yeah, we were a fantastic run. I mean, that Liverpool game was basically gave them the catalyst, I think. They were, the start of the season, quite similar to this, actually, quite a lot of draws and, you know, just not being able to close games out. They went into that Liverpool game, gave them a real run for the money. We all know Suarez handballed it, denied them, Mansfield, you know, returned to a replay at Anfield, and it gave them the confidence to kick off. They barely even dropped a point from that point on. A lot of the criticism they got, really, was it was quite direct. Matt Green, he's good, you know, in the channels, he's got power, he's got a bit of pace, so it was a lot of balls over the top and into space. But, you know, end of the day, it's effective. Mansfield turns back in the football league because of it, and you know, you can't criticise them too much for that because it's a results business. I think that's the difference you've seen this season. Obviously, Matt Green has gone. They're not quite able to do that. It's a bit more balls into feet and a bit more, you know, getting it out wide and a bit more sort of finesse, I guess, one of the better words, and a bit more skill. But you know, he's a manager, Paul Cox. You know, he plays to the strength of the players he's got, and as I say, you know, it worked fantastically, and what a great run it was. You have to feel for a kid missing out, but you know, brilliant for Mansfield Town. They thoroughly deserved it last season.
Do you think? Mentioning that, do you really think there is quite a difference in the jumping quality from the Conference to League Two? It's almost cliche to say it, but you think of the likes of Stevenage and Crawley, and Fleetwood did all right last time around, of trying to get the so-called double bounce. I mean, Paul Cox is a man who, you know, he's not managed in the Football League yet. His actual footballing career itself wasn't particularly glittering. So can Paul Cox adapt to Football League, do you reckon? Has he got enough nous about him?
I think so. He's a very savvy manager, and I mean, you've only got to look at the Mansfield made, you know, 6 games played, 9 points, that's pretty good. As for sort of the gap between the two divisions, I don't think there's a massive amount. You just look at the league table now, you've got Wimbledon in third and Fleetwood in fourth, Newport above Mansfield in ninth, you know, all teams that have come up fairly recently and all teams that are, you know, they've really established themselves in this division. For Paul Cox, I think he's got time. This is a season for establishing Mansfield Town. I mean, if next season they'd be struggling and they sort of in a relegation battle, then perhaps questions could be asked. But he's got a very good chairman, they've got an excellent relationship, and you know, you look at last season, Mansfield Town, just after Christmas, I think they were still outside the playoff before they went on that magnificent run. And you start to think then, well, this is a team that should be winning the division, and this is a team that, you know, 6th, 7th, 8th in the league and not doing very well, might not even get the playoffs. But, you know, Rast have stuck with him all the way. He gave him the confidence. He gave him the belief just to, you know, do what he does and just get on with him managing the team, and the rewards are there. So I don't think there'd be any worry if Mansfield lost 4 or 5 in a row that Cox would be under much pressure.
And he also gave him an 85 grand Aston Martin as well, didn't he?
Nice work if you can get it.
Exactly.
So presumably if he does come off with a 9-0 victory, he'd get him what, like a Bugatti Veyron? I'm trying to work out of a car that might be more expensive.
Well, tell people who don't remember that story what that was all about. That was against Barrow, wasn't it?
Yeah, against Barrow. They absolutely thumped him, and at half time Rathbun just said to Cox, you know, if you win by this score, I'm going to get you this car. And it came off, and I think you were a bit shocked when he went outside after the game and took that car in the car park. I mean, I think we'd all like that for a bus, wouldn't we? Absolutely fantastic.
Definitely, yeah. Talk to us about Radford then, because he bought the club 3 years ago, back in 2010. He's had a fair bit of press, actually. There was a thing on the Football League show a few weeks ago where Clem came up, and there's been a lot of attention because, of course, his wife works there as well, doesn't she? Tell us what he's like as a chairman and what his ambitions are for the club.
Oh, very, very high ambitions. I mean, he's a very good chairman, really, because I say you've gone from the Haslam regime where, you know, absolutely hated by the fans, and sort of the community seems to be pulling away from Mansfield Town, and obviously the team's fallen down to a very lowly level, and slowly but surely they're coming back up, and that's because of structure and the stability that Radford's put in place. You know, as I say, he stuck by Cox through difficult times. He missed out to York the season before last in the playoffs. He stuck with him there, and he stuck with him throughout the season, and he's done the business with Doncaster. And I spoke to him after they got promoted, after they won the league, and his aim was, we want to see Mansfield Town in the Championship. And you think, well, yeah, right, is this, you know, Mansfield Town in the Championship? But then people would have said the same with Yeovil, you'd have said the same with Donny. There's a lot of teams, you know, look at Stockport now.
Oh no,
the level
exactly.
They've fallen, but at some point they're a Championship team, so there is potential there. I think one of the problems for me for Mansfield Town is they've got Forest on the doorstep, and attracting enough fans into the one call to take them to that level is hard, because it's a Nottingham Forest area. People will go and watch Mansfield, but the Forest fans, and that makes it very hard. But you know, behind the scenes, they're looking at getting a new training ground, and you know, they've got new suites under the under the stand for like education facilities, and you know, and sort of conference and things like that. Just all about getting the community part of Mansfield Town again, and for a town like this and a smallish club like this, that's a vital element of what they do. And you can't fault him, really.
And I know it's early days, but if it carries on like this for Notts County, they might be in the same division as Mansfield next season.
Yeah, that'd be a game for a month. I mean, in 2 weeks' time, they've got the derby that they want, but they're away to Chesterfield. And if they could get a play in Notts County as well, it'd be nice to see Mansfield on a par with them. So often they've been the lowly neighbours, and it'd be nice for them to have their turn.
And finally, just before we let you go, Stephen, I know you're actually a Huddersfield fan yourself.
Yeah.
Tell us what you've made of Huddersfield's start to the season while we've got you on. James Vaughan's banging the goals in.
Oh, he's a cracking player. Isn't he? I mean, the signing like that was instrumental. Obviously, we had Beckett as well last season. We didn't manage to return him, but Vaughan's just come back an even better player. And I remember last season, you know, I think it was the 78th minute of the game, and Town were actually, you know, we were getting relegated, and then we scored, and it was Barnsley going down. Amazing game that was. But I think we started our.
Were you at that game?
Yeah.
Tell us what that last few minutes was like then, where the two goalkeepers were just keeping the ball in the penalty area, weren't they?
Yeah, I've never seen anything like it, really. I always remember many years ago watching a game of Italian football where a team needed to win the league the other team needed a point not to get relegated, and then just tippy-tapped it about. And then to actually see it for real like that, it's just absolutely amazing. Townspeople just walking around the 18-yard box with no intention of doing anything. Everyone in the stadium, we are staying up all chanting like both sets of fans, and then Yorkshire. It was just, it was one of those things.
I guess you must have thought for a point, you thought, well, hang on, I've paid money here and I'm not actually watching football. And then you realise the ramifications of, I don't want to watch football. It's incredible.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I think everyone in the stadium, we were happy with. I think 92nd minute with Barnsley, we were going down until Palace scored against Peterborough. That's football and sport, it's very best. It was all the drama, the emotion. It's why we all love the game, something like that. It's fantastic.
Exactly. Right, well, thanks very much for coming on, Stephen. Enjoy the rest of the season.
Yeah, pleasure. Thanks very much.
That's Stephen Thirkell from the Mansfield and Ashfield Chad. Right now, it's time for another edition of My Club. We give a fan of a different Football League club 125 seconds each week to tell us all about their time as a fan. And this week, it's the turn of Charlton Athletic.
This is We Are Going Up. My Club in 125 seconds.
Hello, my name's Ollie Gordelia and my club is Charlton Athletic.
OK, Ollie, so can you remember your first game at the Valley?
Yeah, my first game was in 98 against Derby and we lost 2-1.
And the best moment you've had following Charlton in all these years?
Bizarrely, I'd probably say winning League One about 2 years ago.
Okay.
I was going to ask who's your best manager, but I guess that's probably Alan Kirbishley. So what is your most memorable moment in the Alan Kirbishley years?
I'd probably say when we finished in seventh place in the Premier League in 2004.
And in amongst all of that, who's your favourite player and why?
Even though he left in difficult circumstances, probably Scott Parker.
He's around the block. He might be coming back at some point. He seems to be making his way around all the London teams. Tell us about Chris Powell. What have you made of him as a Charlton manager? How good has he been?
He's been pretty inspirational, considering he took over down in the dumps and now we've gone up to the Championship. Hopefully he can go further.
Your favourite Charlton Athletic goal next, please, Ollie?
Off the top of my head, there's like a 30-yard screamer from El Kakouri against Arsenal. It was in about 05. I think there are others, but that's the first one I think of.
What are your realistic hopes for the season, Ollie?
At the start of the season, I said about 12th, 13th, so anything around there is fine, to be honest, considering we haven't spent any money. So.
Tell us, was the pitch against Doncaster playable or not?
Definitely not.
Okay, your worst moment following Charlton in all the years you followed them?
Probably our second relegation in 3 years, and we went down from Championship to League One.
And who was your manager then?
Phil Parkinson.
And what did you make of him?
He wasn't bad.
Okay. Who was the worst?
Alan Pardew.
Knew we'd get a mention at some point. Right, that's it. Your time's up. Ollie, thanks very much.
No problem.
My Club in 125 seconds. We are going up. We've got the Football League covered.
Right, so we'll have another one of those on the show next week. And right now, Carl, just me and you, but it is time to round up our little sort of 10-point bulletin from what's been going on in the Football League over the last 7 days. And Nick did bring up the topic of agent fees, didn't he? In that little conversation, said that Hartlepool had not spent a penny on agent fees in this new report in the Football League in 2012-13, which has just been published. It's quite interesting reading. Who are the big spenders, as it were?
Yeah, the big spenders. Well, one stands out alone. You probably wouldn't have to take too long until you guessed it in Blackburn Rovers. £3.5 million.
Staggering.
Spend. I mean, obviously, when you think about the £8 million acquisition of Jordan Rhodes, which would no doubt have a decent chunk within that. So it's a controversial one. Well, but they're way ahead of second place, Cardiff City, £1.8 million, who, of course, have gone on to rather grand pastures.
Third?
Third, Wolves. I mean, Crystal Palace are also in this list in the top, and so are Hull. So arguably, there is argument the money is ultimately well spent.
You know what that list was missing, don't you? We needed a little chart music. The teams, though, that haven't spent a penny on agents, and we commend these teams. Blackpool, not a penny has gone to an agent last season.
Well,
Blackpool.
That's not surprising, given, I suppose, Carl Oyston.
Yeah, exactly. Crew, their focus on youth, I suppose, that don't make as much sort of transfer business as other clubs do. Hartlepool, as we mentioned, and also Accrington Stanley, AFC Wimbledon, Barnet and Morecambe.
All teams, of course, who are never going to be big when it comes to financially, never have been, probably never will be. Teams like Morecambe don't even have an academy. Barnet, of course, are now out of the Football League. Crewe is an interesting one, given their incredible over-reliance, but at the same time, their success with youth as well, which is something that teams perhaps could focus a bit more on.
It's well worth having a read of that PDF if you're interested. It's on the Football League website, summary of the club transactions and agents' fees paid last season. And sticking with money, Portsmouth, this preposterous list. I'm sure a lot of you might have seen on Saturday. We retweeted it from John Ashton, who we had on the show, didn't we, last season or the year before, from The Guardian. The money that Portsmouth still owe to some of their former players. And this is a staggering list. Just hit us up again with some of the numbers.
Well, where do you start? Let's remember, of course, where Portsmouth were just a few years ago, winning the FA Cup, playing AC Milan in Europe, and now they find themselves where they do. And the players on this list, there are most, if not all, their big names. You've got, okay, David Nugent, Mark, I'm sure you'll still accept he is still a big
great
name.
Man.
David James, Kanu, Benjani, Hayden Mullins. The list goes on. You know, people like Hasseklep, you know, someone who's played fairly recently for him, Ricardo Rocha, Herman Hrydas, and everyone basically who probably played within their Premier League team and the team in the Championship as well. And it's the figures are the staggering one as well, that they owe money. Stuff like, for example, they're owing lump sums of £200,000 to the likes of Michael Brown, Liam Lawrence. And then on top of that, for example, Liam Lawrence is owed 40 months worth of £10,400. Tal Ben-Haim is owed £1.633 million, a lump sum of £650,000.
Which has just gone out.
Yeah, which should have just gone out into his bank account, so that'll pay for Christmas. And actually, no, he's Jewish. That'll pay for Yom Kippur. And then £150,000 in end of August next year, then 40 months' worth of £20,800.
Dave Kitson, 11 and a half grand a month they're paying him. He pays for place for Oxford now. As you say, Hayden Mullins, 21 grand a month. Michael Brown, nearly 7 grand a month. Benjani, 5.5 grand a month on top of the players they've got at the moment.
Exactly. One would assume a couple of the players, people like David Nugent, are still playing at a decent level. They might waive some of the payments, for example, which will no doubt help Portsmouth out. But at the same time, that's not a given. So this money will, you expect, have to be paid.
Well, we mentioned this basically as an example of what a ridiculous situation Portsmouth find themselves in, and we just hope that no other club will find themselves in a situation quite like that in terms of owing that much money. It is astonishing. Let's move on to slightly more, well, I don't know, is this a positive or not? Let's talk about Coventry. We seem to be a bit of a regular on this 10-point bullet. They won again 2-0 against Colchester on Sunday on the day of recording, but only in front of 1,789 people at Sixfields, which is their lowest ever recorded attendance in the league, their lowest ever. But on the field, they're doing superbly. It's only taken them a month to turn around a negative points tally. They're up to, I think, +2. Now, they're off the bottom of the league. Notts County, bottom of the league, haven't even been deducted any points, and Coventry have overtaken them. And this staggering record of 8 goals in 5 games for 21-year-old Callum Wilson. What a start to the season he's made.
Absolutely, and he's someone that'll have taken his chance. A young player. Coventry, you know, financially struggled, so they're going to have to rely on a lot of youth this season. And he's scored, you know, several goals already this season, and will no doubt hope to continue that vein of form. And Coventry, I mean, credit where it's due. Let's worry about Notts County another day, for example.
Now, well, Stephen Pressley must get a lot of credit for them.
Absolutely. And you know, the statistic about them having their lowest ever attendance is, I guess, an anomaly, but it will be something that will no doubt be maintained throughout the season, or as long as they're at Sixfields. The next game is next home game against Gillingham. I guess, but, you know, it's not too far a journey for Gillingham. I'm trying to think if there's a game where the away fans may not bring many.
But it's interesting. It's interesting the fact that they're doing really well on the pitch, but yet the fans have not been tempted to go, which basically sends a message to the club that no matter how well we do, we are not going to Northampton.
Yeah, absolutely. And given Coventry's start, who knows where they could actually end up this season if they don't get any more, you know, points deductions. And I was trying to think, would this be a relatively wise comparison to compare it to Cardiff City last season, when fans supposedly stayed away, and now all of a sudden they find themselves in the Premier League doing exceptionally well? And you look at the game, of course, against Man City a few weeks ago, where they sold out, and there were a lot of fans wearing, you know, red shirts, for example, and then some wearing blue shirts.
I just don't get the same feeling with this.
It is different, but in terms of fans staying away and what impact it can make, obviously this goes much deeper, and financially it's more problematic than it was at Cardiff. But
Stephen Pressley's not letting it affect the squad in the home games, which is good.
We've talked about how he's managed before, you know, with financial difficulties and irregularities, up in Scotland. So credit where it's due to him. Of course, it's difficult because of the young squad they've got. It may mean a couple of defeats, and all of a sudden that morale is turned around completely, and they find themselves having a very long season, which I think a lot of fans will have been expecting
ahead. They've certainly started off better than anticipated. I think that's fair to say. Sticking with supporters and the issue of fans, DC can probably tell us more about this next week, because he was at the Bristol Derby in the JPT. But really disappointing to find those scenes of trouble at the end. And Sean O'Driscoll, you could tell, was really, really disappointed about it. He was like, I understand it's a derby and, you know, fans have got there's a rivalry here, but It's the first round or second round of the Johnson's Paint Trophy.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what DCW says when he's back next week.
People just got drunk and carried away, I think.
You're going to play a game in the evening. You could always ban alcohol from the stadium, full stop, which might help, but adrenaline will often get the better of people as well, I suppose.
So some of the reactions in the crowd when the second goal went in. It's like they just won the cup or something.
Yeah, I mean, again, it is a big derby. I mean, they don't play each other
very often,
I suppose. So, you know, the chance for this, you know, is pretty rare, but even still, it's a lowly game in the Johnston Paint Trophy. Football fans being pathetic, I'm afraid, is what is the case.
Well, we're still hoping to speak to Jim at some point here before the end of the show, so let's rattle through a couple of quick points. AFC Wimbledon, 3 wins in a row. Michael Smith has got 4 goals in his last 3 games. They're up there right at the top of League Two, which wasn't necessarily expected after the struggle they had only staying up on the last day of the season and that massive scrap when they beat Fleetwood at home. So really good things happening down at King's Meadow.
Yeah, absolutely. No one would be expecting them to be where they are, and you know, no one would be expecting it for them to maintain it either. With Neil Audley, they've obviously got someone synonymous with Wimbledon. That's what the fans want, given their, you know, recent history, AFC Wimbledon. And he naturally has come out and he said he's not going to get carried away. You look at their fixtures coming up, obviously big game which they played against York in terms of, you know, a team they'd expect to be on a par with this season, but Chesterfield, Cheltenham, Burton all coming up, and you know,
tough
to expect to get anything from
Chesterfield
games.
Have had their best ever start to a league season. They only beat Accrington 1-0, which we might have expected to be a slightly higher scoreline, but Chesterfield going brilliantly in League 2. Also in League 1, another team going brilliantly are Rotherham United. Quick doff of the cap to them because they've beaten both Sheffield Wednesday and Sheffield United now this season. Sheffield Wednesday in the Cup, Sheffield United in the League. They could probably say, okay, ignoring Leeds, the best team in Yorkshire.
Yeah, a bit of Yorkshire, yeah.
And flying in League One. So really, I was going to say really good to see, not necessarily the biggest fan of their manager, but good to see a team that had
Rotherham fans a big fan of Steve Evans?
I think they probably are now. They've had such a terrible run in League Two the last few years, so it's good to see them finally enjoying some good times.
I mean, talking of flying, if we want to go mention another point in League One before you move on, let's talk about Bradford Brentford and David Button flying out of his area. I've seen Formula One cars go slower this weekend. Absolutely incredible. Here is a man, David Button. I know that name. And that's because he's had 11 loans moves in 3 years between 2008 and 2011. He's now found a permanent home at Brentford. He'll miss a couple of games. Incredible for those who haven't seen it. Just flying out of his goal. And at what point did he think, well, why am I doing this? And then making contact with the player, the guy naturally flew over.
Well, Bradford's 4-0 win it was after that, wasn't it, against Brentford, and the 100% record at home so far. Yeah. So Bradford and Rotherham, two of the promoted teams from League 2, started off brilliantly in League 1, which makes things interesting. Quickly before we go on to I know you want to talk about the managerial sack race, quickly before we do that, great goal by Alex Pritchard for Swindon.
Yep. If people are going, who's Alex Pritchard? Don't worry, he is from Tottenham Hotspur. We have got him on loan. I believe that's his first ever career goal, actually.
Stand corrected. You would have thought it would have been a left-footer's position from where it was, but he took it with obviously the right foot.
In fact, that is his first league goal. I saw him score a goal against QPR. I was stood there watching him. Incredible free kick. The sending off, the second half of that game, it was obviously televised, so a lot of people might have actually watched it this weekend. The second half was a terrible half of football, really. Really not a good first half.
Poor decision for the disallowed goal as well. I know it went for Swindon.
George Baldock disallowed for offside. He wasn't offside, but there was someone else who arguably was obstructing the view of Wes Fodringham in goal for Swindon. Swindon would take a point. I've actually been quite impressed from what I've seen, actually, in the Mark Cooper, a man who, I must admit, I wasn't really expecting many good things from. No one was really. But I was chatting to a mate of mine, a Swindon fan, who's seen him a lot more this season than I have. And just the signings, a lot of loanees and a lot's been made of that. But they've all settled into the squad very well. They all do look a cut above a lot of what League One's got to offer. And he's playing the football which Paolo Di Canio played, which is passing football, which can be detrimental in League One because of the state of some of the pitches, but Swindon's pitch is excellent. And for example, the game against QPR a couple of weeks ago, we passed them off the pitch for a lot of the game.
Right, last point on our bulletin then. Managerial sack race. What are the odds saying? No one's gone yet.
No one's gone yet, which is surprising because this time last year, Andy Thorne had already gone from Coventry and John Sheridan had already gone from Chesterfield. They went after about 3 games, if memory serves me correct. So I'm surprised, given our history as well on this podcast of putting out a show and then someone getting sacked within 24 hours. Chris Kawamia is obviously going to be one that'll be, well, I was going to say looking over his shoulder, but given he's bottom, he's not got nowhere to look other than up now, unfortunately. James Beattie at Accrington, Stanley, they were always going to have a difficult season. If you go by the bookies, they were favourites as well. You know, they've got not got much going for him. He's got no experience as well. And I suppose a lot of managers in League 2 don't necessarily have that much experience. But maybe, having said that, there'll probably be someone completely out of the blue.
Or maybe
probably
someone like a team who are really underperforming, like AD Boothroyd, Northampton not doing particularly great. I don't know. Watch this space. He might be quite a good bet.
Yeah, I'll put money on that as well. I mean, I am surprised. I wouldn't mind putting money, I don't know who, but I wouldn't mind putting money on by the time the next show comes out. So in 7 or 8 days' time, Mark, when you're sat back here, depending on who is sat around the desk with you, if you're talking about someone who's been sacked finally.
Well, watch this space. Right, I'm going to try and ring Jim just before we end the show. I believe he's on a train.
He's on a train. Well, this is only going to end badly, isn't
it? Oh, no, it's not going to happen. It's going to go straight to voicemail. I can tell this.
And your calling is temporarily unavailable. Please try later.
Well, that's all right. Let's ring Dave. He'll be, you know, just about to enjoy Elton John, for example.
Shall we try?
Try him.
Maybe we'll get some live music to end the show.
We'll either hear absolutely nothing, distorted, either his phone will be off because he's lost all his battery, or we're about to get a wonderful rendition of Rocket Man.
God, it's actually ringing. Didn't think this would happen.
No. Man.
I think I'm going to leave it there.
That was Rocket. That wasn't planned. That was actually Rocket Man in the background. I'm sure of it.
I did not expect him to answer. Right, we'll speak to him about that next week. We're back in 7 days' time.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.